never settle, unless it's into the electrifying BMW i4. Blend the lines of cutting-edge and classic with groundbreaking technology at your fingertips and experience M-engineered precision while you twist around every turn. After all, electric doesn't have to be static. If you thought EVs couldn't live up to your expectations, then you've never experienced the ultimate electric driving machine. The 100% electric 2025 BMW i4.
Hurry into the BMW President's Day sales event and receive exceptional offers through March 2nd.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What a rejoin. First hour in the books right here on the Team 980. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey apps. The youngest in charge, Lynnell Willingham, sitting in for Craig Hoffman as I take you up to 7 o'clock. Craig, back with you on Monday, handling some off-the-air business over the weekend. Back with you Tuesday, handling some off-the-air business over the weekend. I expect him to be out in Indianapolis at the Scouting Combine. Love when Craig gets to go on the road for the offseason because he always brings back good nuggets for us to chew on throughout the rest of the offseason. What we're dishing on right now at 301-230-0980. I continue to believe the core reason why this Washington Commanders team won 12 games and punched their ticket to the NFC title game last year, outside of Jaden Daniels, the core reason is their ability to completely blow free agency out of the water and their ability to hit on some key guys in the draft. If you're just now joining us, to me, I have some question marks, and this is not a bad thing at all. I have some questions, though, about how likely it is that Adam Peters and company can replicate the success of last offseason. Getting culture-setting foundational pieces in free agency and in the draft, how likely is it that they can replicate that moving forward? Because everyone continues to look at Washington through the lens of, oh, they've got $82 million in cap space, and oh, it's the third most to spend in the National Football League, and we got to be aggressive to capitalize on Jaden Daniels being on the rookie deal. I get all of that. But you have 29 unrestricted free agents. Realistically speaking, how many of these guys are you bringing back? There are going to be tough, difficult decisions that have to be made. Tough questions are going to have to be asked. But I know one thing. I fully anticipate them being uber aggressive. It just may not be the level of aggression that you're expecting. 301-230-0980 is the number. Do you think last year's offseason success is replicable? Let's go out to our guy, Atham. What's going on, Atham?
You got to remember something, okay? Even the great Howie Roseman was an inch away from having Carson Wentz 2.0. The Eagles were all in, along with us and the Broncos, to get Russell Wilson a few years ago. So Jalen Hurts, if Russell Wilson wanted to be in Philadelphia, would have been a Seahawk. You just don't know sometimes. Even the great ones get it wrong. Bill Polian said he would have drafted RG0 years ago. Okay, so even the Hall of Famers get it right. I think the biggest thing they need to focus on is, Lynnell, you played sports, okay? If you're doing your job but the three guys next to you aren't, it's going to affect your results and how you look.
For sure.
And that, I think, has a lot to do with the defense this year. You know, Johnny Newton, okay? I mean, if he could have Daron Payne would do his job, maybe Johnny Newton might look better. So I think it's about adding guys that are just going to make an impact but do their job. Who knows to say that Jeremy Chinn might not have been better, or they might have had better cornerback play. That's my take, is you got to make sure you get the core guys around your core pieces to make everybody do their thing. It's just like a well-oiled machine. But you got guys next to you slacking, you're screwed.
I agree with you 100%. It's about everybody getting better, your foundation getting better, and improving the back end of this roster. And that's the point that I really want to hone in on, is like, this is what I asked the question earlier, and maybe, you know, you all can answer it on the phones. Like, man, I want to get your perspective on this too. How do you think Adam Peters and company view themselves internally? Like, how does Washington view themselves internally as an organization? Do they think that they're a roster that is a top four team in the NFL, which their play last year kind of showed based off of their ability to go all the way to the conference title game? That, to me, is what dictates the decision-making. How good internally do you think you actually are? Because that's going to influence the thought process. That's going to influence the decision-making moving forward, in my opinion, at least. Dre is in Waldorf. What's going on, Dre?
What's up, man?
How are you?
First time caller.
Appreciate you, man.
Hey, I really do think we're going to build off the momentum. I really do. If you look at the Skins and the history of us, I mean, we've been some trash. Now we got J5, so now everybody literally will take less to come there, right? They want to come to us. So if you really believe in Peters, all he got to do is sit back and wait and cook. He don't got to overspend now. You know, we always had to overspend. So now we got quality people like Garrett talking about coming, right?
Yeah.
So we can wait and we can really sit back, evaluate, and then pull the trigger on where we really could get better. Right, and then I really think JD5, he elevated the team to another level last year.
For sure.
Right, everybody wanted to ball out for JD5. That's the new thing now, right? So you see so many people off the field bang with him, and that brings it on the field. Right, it just takes it to the next level with the culture where, like, now you got dudes that's like, yo, I want to go play for Skins. And I really see the difference now, where now he don't have to really worry about building so much of trying to go overspend. He can really sit back and say, I got two holes here I need to fill. Fill those holes with decent players. We might not know their names,
mm-hmm.
but fill those holes with those blue-collar, blue-chip yep. players, because we're going to already elevate them, right?
For sure. I think you hit it perfectly, bro. You don't got to go out. Here's the analogy I'll use, Dre. I don't know how much you into the drip or not. You don't, when you got Jaden Daniels under center, you don't got to go to Neiman Marcus. It don't got to be a red bottom Saturday afternoon for you.
Come on, dog. You step out with the Czar.
Come on, man. Talk to him.
I got a twin brother, homie, and my twin brother's a Cowboy fan. Slim, this was the best gear ever for me in a long time.
I can only imagine y'all fools growing up, bro, man. Good Lord. He'd probably be giving you hell, man.
You hear me? Look at Dak. Nobody wants to play for them. They don't want to pay their players.
Yep.
Dak got his money. And nobody else is trying to eat. Everybody looking at us like, yo, they going to come eat. You can get your money. Hey, you can take less, or we going to work with you, right? It's just a better system.
Yeah.
So guess what? If you're not a commander, if you're not with it, you can go ahead. Because we still going to get these other players that's decent that still want to come here.
For sure. Appreciate your call as always, Dre. 301-230-0980 is the number. You like my analogy? You don't got to shop at Neiman Marcus if you're the Washington Commanders, man. You can go to Fashion Nova Men's. You see my jacket over there. Tag still on the joint. But no, in reality, man, I think this is – Dre makes an excellent point, and I've been hitting on this as well. Like, it reminds me of, like, some of the conversations surrounding T. Higgins and wide receiver two. Like, would you go after a Chris Godwin or a thing of that nature? Look at the four horsemen across the National Football League, as I like to call them. Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Pat Mahomes, Josh Allen. How many of those guys have one bona fide number one wide receiver, yet alone two? I know Burrow's kind of the exception, but you see how that's playing out there in Cincinnati. Do you want that here? So that's what I'm saying. I think there's going to be a lot of shrewd moves that have to be made. And maybe, just maybe, they don't bring in your favorite wide receiver target in free agency. maybe, just maybe, they don't get Myles Garrett or even a Khalil Mack who has been mentioned. But what I'm asking is, do you have the trust, do you have the faith that despite the names that they bring in, they'll get them to maximize their potential? Because I'll be real with you. And I remember we made this joke last year out at camp. I said, bro, there's no way Damier Bird makes this final 53. I've watched you play flag football. You look more physically imposing than Damier Bird. And you see it, but they were able to maximize. A lot of days the kids, we were saying the same thing. Now, your legs ain't got nothing on OZ.
All right, chill,
legs.
Chill, chill.
Shawty thick down bottom. Shawty know what he's doing. He's been in the weight room. But, like, the point is, when those signings were made, you didn't think, oh, this is going to be the third leading receiver on Washington. You didn't think, oh, this is going to be a key contributor. So, a name I keep throwing out, and I think I said it to you, you rolled your eyes. I look at Darius Slayton. Your man, A-Mac, for the New York Giants. You couldn't tell me that Darius Slayton wouldn't come here and go Kanye crazy. As a number two that's got speed, hands are inconsistent a little bit, I get it. But at, what is he, 27 years old? He's somebody that maybe, just maybe, his best football is still ahead of him. 301-230-0980 is the number. What's going on, Little? You owe me a steak, bro, man.
Big fella.
What's going on, man?
Big fella, man, look. You got to have priority callers, man. You come on, we legends, man.
Come on, man. Look, I got to you.
It's Black History Month. I'm going to share a little thing with you.
Go ahead.
I'm gonna
tell you this.
Yeah, I'm going to share a little. Give me 1 minute. Hey, look. I look at tape just like they look at tape, Linnell, and you look at tape too. The kid be wide open, but he's just a decoy right now. When the kid become an option, that kid going to be a beast, man. I'm talking about white chocolate.
You're talking about Luke McCaffrey.
The kid be wide open. He's just not an option right now. He's a decoy. Now, let me say this. Man, look, we're going after DeMarcus Lawrence, man, a run stopper. He didn't even play a down last year.
And, Little, you speaking my language.
He's acclimated to Joe Witt's defense. Let me share a little something with y'all, because we're talking about Canadian and all that on Rooster Show. I meant to get in. It's Black History Month. My great-grandmother is Louise Little. She's a Grenadian.
Okay.
She came from Grenada, and I think when she was about 14 years old, and she ended up marrying Earl Little,
okay,
which was Baptist preacher. Earl Little produced
Little, where are you going with this? Where are you going with this, brother?
This Black History Month.
I know it's, brother, we appreciate the call. I know what month it is. 301-230-0980. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we will continue to look ahead of this Commanders offseason. I want to look more at the draft and look at which draft prospects from last year are teetering towards being a bust, and who do I think is going to take a big step forward in year number two. Your calls in that next. Hardest rejoin music in the game, man.
You think so?
I know so. I know so. 301-230-0980, the number right here on the Craig Hoffman Show. Youngest in charge, Linnell Willingham, sitting in for Craig Hoffman. He's back with you on Tuesday. Me and you the next 2 days. Me, you, and the Ant-Man. Tomorrow, as we've been telling you all show long, we are live out on the concourse at Capital One Arena ahead of the Wizards' first game out of the All-Star break and the return of Kyle Kuzma. Excited for that. Tomorrow night, Bucks coming to town to take on the young Wizards. We will be joined by Josh Robbins of The Athletic to give us the skinny on the Washington Wizards post-trade deadline, including whether or not we're going to see Chris Middleton and Marcus Smart lace them up tomorrow night. So a big show planned for you tomorrow. Rest of the way here this afternoon as we take you up to 7 o'clock. In about 9 minutes or so, we'll be joined by the lead draft analyst for A to Z Sports, Joe DeLeon. He'll give us the skinny on the Commanders and what positions they should be targeting in the NFL draft, as well as maybe some guys on day two and day three that are not your household names that you see mocked in round one at some positions of need for the Burgundy and Gold. So make sure you stick around right here on the Team 980 for Joe DeLeon. The NBA returns tonight. We'll discuss that before we get out of this 5 o'clock hour, but I was saying it before we went to break, and I know y'all want to jump down my throat for this, but, like, when I look at last year's draft class, to me, Mikey, Brandon Coleman, Jaden Daniels are the only three guys I for sure look at and go, yeah, those guys are legit. Yeah, those guys are foundational building blocks moving forward. The rest of the guys, in my opinion, the jury is very much still out. And I don't mean that as some sort of slight or indictment on those players. Let's just be real here, right? Like, I'm not sure what we're going to get moving forward from a guy like Johnny Newton. And I want to focus on Johnny Newton here because I said it on draft night. It was the best player available on the board, I guess. But what I look at with Johnny Newton is, one, he was injured throughout the duration of training camp. So I think, obviously, he was going to get off to a slow start in his rookie year. But to me, when I draft a defensive tackle, I want a guy that can play both the run and the pass. And it felt like last year with Johnny Newton, it was a lot more juice as a pass rusher, not as much as a run defender. And his PFF grades reflect that. I know I don't really lean into PFF like that. It's not my cup of tea. But according to PFF, last year for Johnny Newton, during his rookie season, 63 pass rush grade, was 73rd out of 219 defensive linemen. And then his run defense grade was 44.8, 158th out of 219. So the PFF grades speak to what the eye test said with Johnny Newton. And that was that he is a guy that's probably not ready yet. And for the guys that didn't meet my expectations in year one, I think he's got the best shot of turning into someone, turning into a household name. Because I think from a talent perspective, he was the most talented guy between him and the other picks. So I expect, maybe saying I expect is too bold of a proclamation, but I can fully anticipate Johnny Newton taking a step forward next year. A full offseason in an NFL weight training program, a full offseason where you actually, and here's the caveat, right, the key thing, a full offseason where you get to work on your game, not rehab. I'll tell you straight up, when you're an athlete going through your offseason and you've got to rehab and worry about an injury on top of honing your skills, it's tough. It's distracting. And naturally, you don't put as much work in on your craft as maybe you should. So I'm curious to see with a full offseason how much better Johnny Newton gets. Because he was a second-round pick. That is a premium position pick. He's got to turn into somebody. The other guy I look at in the draft class, I mentioned him, Luke McCaffrey and Ben Sinnott. Logan Paulson had some thoughts on him earlier today with John Kime, basically saying from the neck up, he struggled last year. Assignment, alignment, things of that nature. In year one, a lot was swimming for him. If that was his major problem, can I bank on that getting better next year? And then you know what I think immediately? They didn't draft a smart football player. And all we kept hearing was smart, tough, physical. Well, if Luke is struggling at the tight end position in year number one, mentally, what's the issue? And that's my thing. How do you struggle mentally at tight end? You're like an offensive lineman. What, does he not know what route to run? And I'm trying to realistically think, like, how do you struggle mentally at tight end? You either sift block across the formation, you either down block, you're either blocking the dude right ahead of you, you either arc release and block. How do you not get that? So I wonder with Ben Sinnott how good he's actually going to be. And then with Luke McCaffrey, like, I hear all the advanced analytics talking about his separation grade and all that. But here is my takeaway with him. Last year, you had a revolving door at wide receiver. Olamide Zaccheaus saw big snaps. Noah Brown saw big snaps. Jamison Crowder saw big snaps. He couldn't play. Diami saw big snaps. He struggled to play over those guys. So when this room gets better and more improved this time around, does he make that jump with it from a talent perspective? And to be real with you, the jury's still out for me. Love the attitude, love the toughness, love the work ethic. Think about it, right? This is why we all fell in love with Luke McCaffrey. I'm going to drop a dime on you real quick. Why did we all fall in love with Luke McCaffrey? Because who was next to Jaden Daniels at 4:30 in the morning every damn day working out? Whose name got pumped up as a result of that? Luke McCaffrey. He was the one catching the balls from Jaden Daniels. So we know he's going to put in the work. Sometimes, man, you just don't got it. And that may be the case coming up with our guy Luke McCaffrey. 301-230-0980 is the number. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll go to the guest hotline for the first time here this afternoon. Joe DeLeon, lead draft analyst for A to Z Sports, joins us next to give us the latest on the NFL draft. That's next here on the Team 980.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
301-230-0980, the number right here on the Hoffman Show, right here on the Team 980. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey app. It's the youngest in charge of L. Willingham sitting in for Craig Hoffman. We'll take you up to 7 o'clock here with you today and tomorrow. Craig back with you, coming up on Tuesday. Right now, I want to continue to shift our focus toward the NFL draft. This NFL offseason, I keep saying it, is moving faster than one I can remember here. And I think that has a big part to do with the Commanders going farther than they've gone in my entire life, fresh off of a season where they punched their ticket to the NFC Championship game. The question now remains, how do they build off of it? How do they capitalize? I look toward the NFL draft. And when we're talking all things NFL draft, we want to bring on the absolute best. That's why we're joined right now by lead draft analyst for A to Z Sports, our guy Joe DeLeon. You can give him a follow on the X app at Joe, DeLeone. Joe, what's going on, my brother? How you doing, man?
Doing pretty good. The combine's pretty close, so I'm juiced up that, you know, as you're talking about here, it feels like this process, we've blown through it, and we're about to hit one of the most entertaining parts of the draft cycle.
I'm glad you characterized it as entertaining, Joe, because I always say, you know, it may be a little quiet on the content front right now, but you wait till next week when GMs and agents are sipping cocktails out at Ocean's Prime. We'll get some info, right, Joe, in terms of who potentially is going to be on the move and what teams are interested in who. But as we look at this draft, Joe, through the lens of the Washington Commanders, obviously I think a lot of us here locally feel like when you're in the same division as the Philadelphia Eagles, it is paramount, right, that you go out and attack the trenches hard. And I think if you're Washington, this is the perfect draft class for you to be able to do so on both sides of the football. I want to start on the defensive line first, Joe. Washington right now at pick number 29. I don't know whether or not they should stay there. Most folks say the meat of this class is picks 20 through 60, so I don't know how smart it would be to stick and pick. But when you look at some interior defensive linemen and some edge rushers in that 29 early second round range, who do you think fits the bill as a potential Commander?
Well, first, I just want to talk on what you just mentioned there, the sticking and picking. This class, a lot of the guys that are worthy of being selected at the end of the first round are going to be really similarly graded with a chunk of dudes that are going to go in the second and third round. And it's a very weird class where we've got some blue chippers at the top, but it's really a lot of guys that are super balanced. So this is a year for the Commanders, as you're talking about, being in a position to start to bolster their defensive line. Their defensive tackles are some of the best in the league. So the priority with that first pick for me needs to be finding edge rushers if they don't end up getting a guy like Myles Garrett through free agency. And picking where they are at the back end of the first round, if they stay, I like the thought of Nick Scowerton from Texas A&M, who's a super powerful, hard-nosed, edge rusher who's slid a little bit since the preseason, who was possibly a top 10 pick, but the Commanders can benefit from that from some other guys rising. Shamar Stewart probably won't be there, but he's a name to just keep track of if he does end up still sticking around, because he is super athletic. He's got a lot of potential, but doesn't necessarily have the production. And then lastly, Mikel Williams from Georgia, very similar to Stewart, where his potential is really high. He's a really strong player. He's a great run defender, but hasn't shown us what he can be as a pass rusher because he doesn't have the college sack production that you would typically look for in a edge prospect.
So, Joe, I want to ask you this. I got this number from our pal Todd McShay over at The Ringer. So, you know, last year's edge rush class had two guys with a pass rush win rate over 21%. It was Latu and then Jared Verse. In this class, Joe, 10 edge rushers have a pass rush win rate over 21%. So when you look at the depth of the group, are there different flavors of defensive ends? Because I know they come in all shapes and sizes. You got your traditional thick build guys that are going to be stout at the point of attack against the run. You have your situational pass rushers. Ideally, right, if you're Washington, you get someone that's got a little bit of both. When you look at the chunk of this class, where do you think the talent kind of leans in terms of style of defensive end?
Right. I think the way that you just described it and the way that McShay has done an amazing job of describing this class is that there's a lot of different directions that you can turn into. And I just pointed out two guys that are their height, weight, speed freaks. They're guys that you're going to select that maybe their first couple of years, they don't play to that potential, but you're putting them into a defensive line with the Commanders that they would be set up to eventually succeed. Or there's guys that I look at, like Mike Green from Marshall is a really good example of someone who's not as tall and not as long, but was really productive at Marshall this past year as a sophomore because he's got really good hands. He's really technically refined. Kind of reminds me, and it's not a direct comparison, but like last year with Leyi Tulatu, he rose throughout the process because the more that we got to see him play, the more that we saw the technical refinement and focus and the detail to playing the position, and I think that Mike Green from Marshall has that.
Yeah, I agree, and Mike Green is someone like I saw a mock draft put out from Daniel Jeremiah. He's now got Mike Green in the top 10. So to your point, you see how these guys begin to rise throughout this process. Speaking of guys rising throughout the process, relative to the defensive line, who do you expect to shoot up the board after the combine? Because it's going to happen.
I think it's Yeah, oh no, absolutely. I think it's going to be Shamar Stewart who I brought up there. Okay. And I think, like, I bring up all these, there's a lot of names that we could talk about here because there's going to be this big ebb and flow with who goes where. But Shamar Stewart's the first person I think of because, again, his production in college, he had very little production in college. Yeah. He didn't really do a whole lot in terms of getting after the quarterback. But he's one of those guys that you look at and it's like he was built in a lab. Like he was built to be rushing the passer and to be an NFL player because he's just so physically gifted. I think his numbers are going to be through the roof. And I think the same could be said for Mikel Williams from Georgia because he's tall, he's long, he's going to jump really well, he's going to run a really good 40. Those are the first two quick ones that come to mind. And if I were to throw in I know that we're mostly talking edge rushers, but a defensive tackle that I think is going to really move is Darius Alexander from Toledo, who had an awesome Senior Bowl.
Yes.
And he at 6'4", he's long, and he can get off the ball super quick, so I'd pay attention to him.
Yeah, I know that pick six that he had is what's got people raving right now, man. He is a monster of an athlete. I agree with you, though, man. I think he is someone that's going to shoot up these draft boards. A couple other names that have interested me. Braden Swinson has been interesting. The kid Oladejo from UCLA has been interesting. So it's a lot of names, like you're saying. I want to flip to the offensive side of the football. And I guess I'll ask you a open-ended question first. Like, how do you describe this offensive line class, Joe?
There's a lot of really high floor guys that I think are going to be steady starters. This offensive line class had a number of players that I thought we were hoping would have amazing seasons this year, and they stagnated. They kind of stayed the same. Tate Ratledge from Georgia is an example of that. He didn't live up to the billing of being a possible late first rounder. He's probably more of a third round pick. Emory Jones, who was a great right tackle at LSU, a couple of years ago, he didn't really take that step forward we were hoping for, but you still see the tools for him to be a great guard in the NFL. So we've got a lot of guys that have the tools that could step in and start right away, but we don't have a player in this class like a Paris Johnson or a Peter Skoronski or a Joe Alt or Olufoshanu that's going to be a potential future all-pro on a consistent basis because they're out of the world gifted. There's still plenty of starters to be found, but I think any team like the Commanders looking for offensive linemen should take that with a grain of salt because the options, they're just not as good as usual. The last part with this, it really tails off when you get to like the fifth round. That's, I think, one of the rarities that we don't always see with these offensive line classes. It really, really lacks back-end depth, and if you're taking guys on day three, expect that they're probably just going to be backups and they might not even stick on the roster.
Joe, I want to ask you this relative to the O-line and the D-line. How late can you get a fringe starter, immediate depth guy?
On the offensive line, I would say the end of the third round, maybe early on in the fourth.
Wow, that's tremendous depth, though, man.
It sounds pretty good, but like normally we can find some like quality players that are somewhere in the fifth and sixth round with some of these classes. But when we look at some of these names at the end of the third round, it starts to get pretty shaky and unreliable. The defensive tackle class, though, like we could really possibly end up seeing prospects that are seventh rounders, sixth rounders that go on to be important, high-contributing, productive starters. I really think that this defensive tackle class is going to be special and one that we're going to be talking about in a few years of having some unreal players.
Wow, so you think, I mean, to think about that, like from the Commander's perspective, I know one hot-button topic, Joe, that people have been clamoring about here locally is if the Commanders part ways with Jonathan Allen, no more guaranteed money on his deal, you free up $16 million in cap space. And you know what I keep saying? Well, it's one thing to get the cap, right, Joe? But you want to make sure you're not just getting rid of quality football players. But when you consider the depth of this defensive tackle class, maybe it makes a team like Washington more inclined to move on. But on the flip side, the D-tackle market, I would have to think, is going to get saturated because of all the war daddies that are coming out.
Yeah, and I think that that's like a really interesting angle that needs to be thought through for this draft class. And defensive tackles, their value has really kind of shifted over the last couple of years. And at one point, it felt like drafting a defensive tackle early wasn't worth it, and also signing one to a massive contract in free agency wasn't worth it. Unless a guy is a multi-down weapon that is a great pass rusher and a run defender, they're just not worth the investment. Now, I think that Jonathan Allen is an amazing defensive lineman, and keeping him, I think, is important for the success of this franchise. Jerjon Newton, having him on the roster and seeing him potentially emerge helps that they already have him into the mix. But if we look, as you're bringing up here on day two, you could end up taking a couple of swings on a guy on day two and a guy on day three to find a replacement. I look at Darius Alexander, who I brought up earlier. Walter Nolan is super high potential and is probably going to slide just because there were a lot of lows on his tape, a lot of inconsistent effort. But if you can unlock the potential, he's a great player. And if we go as far as to day three, Cam Jackson from Florida is a tall, long kid, or Jamari Caldwell is a massive body at 340 pounds. Yeah, there's just so many options that you can end up finding to fit so many different body types of defensive tackle.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it ultimately plays out. Joined right now on the guest hotline by Joe DeLeon, draft analyst for A to Z Sports. Make sure you give him a follow on the X app at Joe, DeLeone. I want to move to some of the sexy picks, Joe. This is the one thing that's kind of been funny to me. You keep hearing early in this process that this class is just not very good. They don't have the potentially franchise-altering quarterback. There aren't a ton of high-end wide receivers. But I say, man, it may not be a good draft for TV, Joe, but in the trenches, as we've kind of just alluded to, there are options all over the place. And I really do think the depth of this class is super high quality. But when you look at some of the wide receiver options in this draft, Washington, again, like we said, at pick 29, a couple of different guys could be there. Emeka Buka, Luther Burden, you name it. When you look at some of the options on day two at wide receiver, who do you like relative to Washington?
Yeah, to one, touch on what this class is like. It really, this receiver class is underwhelming. And it's, the thing that's tough with this receiver group is we were so spoiled for multiple years these classes that we saw some amazing names that were picked on day two and even on day three. But this class on day two, I'm a very big fan of Jaden Higgins from Iowa State. I put out a lot of tape on him on my Twitter account. He is tall. He is long. And for at 6'4", 215, the way that he's able to shift in and out of his breaks, that's some special stuff. He's got the capability and the potential, I think, to eventually become a premier receiver on a roster. Maybe he doesn't fully pan out and he ends up just being a third or a fourth option, which is always a decent add to get in the third round. But if there's a spot or a guy that I think ends up becoming a go-to target on a team that's a second or a third round pick, it's going to be Jaden Higgins. One other guy that I really, really like and I've been a fan of since I first watched his tape, he was one of the first guys that I watched in this class, I really like Jalen Royals from Utah State.
Yeah,
he didn't play most of the year because he got banged up, but talk about a guy that is really, really quick with his feet. He is a great route runner. He's got good concentration, and his play style sets him up to be really good after the catch. So he could be, for this Commanders team, a really nice player into the mix, knowing that they've already got their number one guy. They've got Terry McLaurin. You just need other playmakers that can play off of him, and Jalen Royals is that.
Two more for you, Joe, before we let you go, man. I appreciate you making some time for us, my man. You have been absolutely awesome getting us up to speed with the top prospects that we're expected to see out in Indy. Want to go running back here for a second, Joe. It's been a position that, you know, I think Washington's going to look to upgrade. I don't foresee Brian Robinson being that starting tailback for them entering next season. Some potential options for the Commanders at running back to kind of fit this scheme that they're trying to run.
Yeah, this running back class is insanely loaded. Like, we are another position group, kind of like what I talked about here at the defensive tackles. There's a really strong chance that there could be a sixth-round pick for a team that goes on to be a 1,000-yard rusher. But if the Commanders are looking for a mid-round investment for guys that could play alongside Brian Robinson, one of my favorites, or two of my favorites, I really like Devin Neal from Kansas. He's got really nice vision. He's super patient, and he's got good burst out of his cuts. I'm a big fan of Kyle Manungai from Rutgers, local to me. I've been always excited watching him run. Doesn't have that top-end gear that we always look for in running backs, but he runs hard. He will run through you, and he kind of reminds me of Kyren Williams, who went late to the Rams and just did everything right. Was a hard, you know, just willing to block, willing to get his nose dirty wherever he could, high-effort player, and then earned opportunities to get touches and eventually become the top running back.
And then the cornerback position, man, I think it's one that I think us Commander fans probably don't look at enough as a potential position in need. You were able to hit on Mikey Samuels still last year, but the broom is, you know, not flush with depth as you enter free agency. Some cornerback options, and then how late could you get a potential starter at corner in this draft?
Yeah, finding like an outside starter, it does – there's not really like a ton of like premier options, but if we're looking for depth, someone like Maxwell Hairston from Kentucky is a name that I would keep an eye on. He's got great length. He's got pretty good instincts. Trey Amos from Ole Miss is a player who is really good when the ball is in the air. And then if you're looking for guys that are going to succeed in the slot, I like Jason Marshall Jr. From Florida, who's got just a strong frame. He's a good tackler. He's going to play physical. You need those types of guys to do well in the slot. So there's some decent options. There's not really going to be a guy who could break out to be a potential Pro Bowler. But as you just mentioned there, if you're looking for just some depth and some quality players, this class has the names for it.
Joe, man, you were awesome, my friend. I appreciate you giving us some time, my friend. Happy draft season, my guy.
Of course. Thanks for having me. I'm sure we'll get to catch up soon.
Yes, indeed, my man. That was absolutely awesome. Joe DeLeon, A to Z Sports, giving us the latest on the NFL Draft Scouting Combine next week in Indianapolis. I am eager to get to it, man. This is one of my favorite times of the year. And this time around, now knowing that Washington has the quarterback position figured out, we can worry about some of those other ancillary pieces that really help out the quarterback. What he mentioned about this defensive line group is super interesting. I want to get into that next, right here on the Team 980.